Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And boy, do we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the easy stuff and then just work our way in. So I figure we talked the ending of Alien Earth, didn't we?
We didn't record last week because I went to Back to the Future. Okay. The musical.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we're going to get to that. I guess we could just talk about that really quick. It was like, okay. I mean, there's nothing. Like, I don't even know what to say about it. Like, it's like, I finally figured out what he's like copying from. This motherfucker is copying from Ghost in the Shell. Like,
I've never seen Ghost in the Shell. So,
but it made me even more mad when I realized the anime, yeah. not the Scarlett Johansson.
I think Ryan and I watched Ghost in the Shell back when we were doing Mr. Robot in the downtime between seasons. I think that was one of the movies that because we wanted to watch stuff that was, you know, like
adjacent.
You know, stuff like that. And so maybe I did watch it. Or maybe we just talked about watching it and never get around to it, but
okay.
I have nothing to say about the finale that I haven't already said about the show. Still baffled that people are enjoying the show
or calling it like genius. And, I heard the genius word a few times and I'm like, what are you talking about?
It is the TV show equivalent of, the art that people like to point at and go, this is brilliant. I'm not talking about like actual brilliant art or statement pieces or like just the shit that you see, not the, my kid could paint that, your kid can't make this show, but it's just like somebody threw a lot of money at something and some other people like they're afraid to just call it out. I don't want to say that they're afraid. If people are enjoying it, great. But, I have nothing new to add to the, like, this isn't good train that we've been on. It's a very beautiful, well-acted mess of nothingness. I mean, it is just not great. By comparison, so you got me interested to check out the new Dexter show, but I told myself, I was like, you know, Adam says you can just jump in and I'm sure you can, but me being me, you know, completist, like go back and watch all the stuff you didn't watch. It's not that many episodes. So this past week I binged Dexter
New Blood.
Yes,
New Blood.
So that's also a mess of a show. I wouldn't say it's it's acted. I don't want to say well acted. There's a few really solid performances, but the show gets its stuff. It has a point. Because Dexter does navel gaze. Like, that's one of the things I don't love about the show, is the ponderous bullshit that it would get into. Because it never seemed to answer those questions. But it feels like a story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But also, like, so, like, the one... Okay, so I had to ask. Like, I feel like what the biggest component for me for Resurrection that I feel like was this is a Dexter show, is they had James Remar come back as his father, or as his stepfather. I mean, whatever you want to call him, his adoptive father, whatever you're like, oh, I'm sorry, spoilers for a fucking, like, I mean, it's not even really a spoiler, but, in the other show, in New Blood, he didn't come back as a flashback or even as a ghost.
No,
or
they used his sister. Like,
yeah,
she became the, because his dad was like critical but supportive, and his sister is just critical. And it's interesting because they use that as a way for him to be incompetent. Like, did you see all of New Blood?
I know that we're gonna have to get back to it because my wife loves Dexter. We're gonna watch the prequel series.
Yeah, I do think it's worth going back to. Mm-hmm. It just as a like completist kind of thing, but there is some really good stuff there. The whole of Dexter that I remember, I'm not going to go back and rewatch it, but mm-hmm. he was a fairly competent person. Like,
yeah,
people did find the bodies, but and stuff does happen. But like, he controlled his narrative so well for the most part that he could weave in and out of things. And I always found it weird when he became a suspect, because I always felt like he was doing a pretty good job of keeping himself out of that. So
absolutely,
this show has him being incompetent because it's been 15 years since he's done anything, which I also find it a little hard to believe. Like, mm-hmm. he had those dark urges and somehow could suppress them for 15 years.
But they
do kind of equate it to drug abuse, alcoholism, stuff like that. You know, people do mm-hmm. get clean. And, of course, something happens and he starts back down this road again. But the problem is, instead of his dad standing there going, like, remember the code, remember what you're supposed to do, it's his sister going like, what the fuck are you doing, Dex? Like, just berating him the whole time. So it's at least a kind of a statement on like generational trauma, which I know that's something we talk about a lot, like everybody mm-hmm. talks about it, but it's at least saying something. And Alien Earth is just like, I don't know. It's so like not committed to its own convictions, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's also very
pisses me off.
It's also very basic for a show that costs $200 million or actually it's more. It's like $300 or $350 million. Written by somebody who's a supposed genius. I'm starting to think more and more that he fucking lucked into our favorite show of his,
Legion.
Yeah, I really think that he lucked into that, or he was doing his drugs that he was supposed, like, it's like Aaron Sorkin when he stopped doing coke. Like, yeah, he became like, less.
Oh, you can tell, man.
Yeah, oh, you can absolutely tell. He became lesser of a, like, I know that sounds terrible, but like Hemingway and alcohol, and Aaron Sorkin and coke, like Aaron Sorkin and coke, that was a match made in heaven. Like West Wing, Sports Night, like that's, there was a level of
like all of that dialogue, like it's so like bam 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 bam, like, and yeah, it is interesting when creatives, like, I support all of them getting off of their vices,
yes.
but it is interesting what happens when that happens, like what you get. Stephen King off drugs is much different than Stephen King. Like,
oh yeah,
go read the Tommyknockers or Dreamcatcher and know that this man was doing massive amounts of drugs.
Yeah. And, well, hell, even just read something like The Stand. and try to or it like it has a like I try to tell people like it I read it when I was 10 and to have a scene that a 35-year-old man wrote basically a girl like a 11-year-old girl laying down and letting four other boys literally have sex with her. Like, it was basically a gangbang that happens in the book. Like, literally this fucking happens in the book, in the same book that there's a magical turtle. Like,
nobody was like, hey, man, you got to take that out.
Yeah. Like, at the same time, this is the same book that has a magical turtle that has the weight of the world on top of it that they meet.
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of shit he was writing. Like, wild, right? Like, yeah. This man's on drugs. But also, like, in the 80s. But, I mean, this was at the time where a 15-year-old Brooke Shields was being egged on by society in Blue Lagoon. Like, you know, like, the 80s were a lot of things, and Terrible was one of them. But, back to your point. I'm sorry. Like, drugs, like, there's some people that, like, the drugs unlock something. I don't know what it is. but, yeah.
Alien Earth sucked. A show. So since we're talking about FX, mm-hmm. a show that doesn't suck returned to FX this week. And I don't think, did you ever get around to watching season one of The English Teacher?
No, I did not. And I was I knew where you were going with this. Like, there's also another show.
Week. It actually returned last week.
Last week. Yeah.
Six episodes up now?
Yeah, like the anti-Abbott, what I like to call the anti-Abbott, because they did it purposely. Like, we know that they released it a week before Abbott, and because it's dealing with kind of like similar topics, it's just a very much more cynical look at things. I did not get to it.
I really, if you can make some time, especially because it seems like they're burning off this season.
Yeah.
In three episode clips. I don't think there's any specific starting point for the show. Mm-hmm. Much like another show I mentioned, which I still haven't finished, but long story short, still going really good. Everybody should check that out. But mm-hmm. yeah, there's one specific episode of this season of The English Teacher that I watched that I want to, sorry, Ripley's losing her mind. That I want to call out. So it's about students putting in their college applications.
Uh-huh.
And so the main character, he's an English teacher, he's a gay Latino man, and he loves to get on his high horse about stuff. Mm-hmm. He's very opinionated and wants everybody to know what his opinion is. But he is, it's a nice character. He's not overbearing, but he starts going on about the loss of the DEI initiatives and what that's doing to underprivileged college students. And one of the teachers, one of his best friends, is like, I understand where you're coming from with that because you were a DEI hire. And he's like, no, I wasn't. I was hired on my merit. And he's like, I'm just telling you what I heard. So he goes to the principal to ask if he was a DEI hire, and the principal does the thing where it's like, I can't discuss this with you, which is just saying yes, right? Yes,
yeah.
So then he becomes so anti-DEI because it worked for him and he wasn't hired on his own merit. It's fucking brilliant.
Oh wow! Like that's fucking hilarious. Journey
that the show goes on, mm-hmm. and how he's now just like, well, but I want to be hired on my own merit. His boyfriend convinces him to apply for a job as a straight white guy, but the guy hiring him is a gay man. Interviewing him is a gay man and knows that he's gay. Uh-huh. Like, he's like, you don't have to pretend. Like, I you know, my gaydar is fine. And it just becomes this whole thing that's fucking hysterical. It is so funny. But yeah, everybody should go check out The English Teacher. FX had a pretty good couple of weeks, despite us not liking Alien Earth, because...
Yeah. Did you watch Lowdown? I watched the first... Oh, okay.
I want to get to it, but I haven't got to it yet.
I watched the first episode, and I really liked it. I really liked it a lot. But it is a very slow burn. I know that the people use this a lot, but I feel like this is like very applicable to this show. It's very novelistic in the way it approaches things. It's because it takes place in Oklahoma. There's this kind of like vibe to it that's a lot slower. Like at the beginning, like it sets up everything. You get everything that you need for the like what you think is going to be the beginning of like you know the story and stuff. But it is very kind of like. It didn't give you everything all at once. Like, it was like, we're going to show you stuff. I mean, it introduces Ethan Hawke, and some of the characters, but like, there's a lot of people that I know that are in the cast that have not been introduced. Like they're still not putting them on the screen, which gives me the idea that this is more of a show that it's going to take its time with its 10 episodes to get to its point. But Sterling Harjo is a guy who, like Reservation Dogs, I think we both saw it and we both agreed.
No, I didn't. I want to watch it, but I just never got around to it.
Like Reservation Dogs is like a brilliant, brilliant show, and it like you know it's proving to have like its return on investment with all of the cast that's coming out of it is just like brilliant, right? But here it's a completely different show because it's more of a murder mystery. It's still dealing like it's really weird that both shows deal with a suicide. It's a very weird thing. But also, like, it's a very interesting show because it's just got this vibe. It's a very kind of vibey show. And I think that that's what my wife did not like about it, which was it's like you're – if you like Ethan Hawke and you like the way that, like, Ethan Hawke can be charming and kind of like a rascal, like, this is going to be the show for you. He steals – like, at a certain point, he steals, like, a very expensive painting, but he steals it from a bunch of pieces of shit. But then he's like, there's like payback for that. There's a moment where like he gets his ass kicked by a bunch of skinheads because he wrote an article about them. But it's like this very like it's not this fast paced show. It's this show where you're driving around with Ethan Hawke listening to music while he tokes on his vape, like his weed vape, and just sitting there like talking about like you know. Free press and shit. So like if you like that kind of stuff, this is going to be your show because it's taking its time. And I don't mind that. Like it's very much it feels like if you ever read the E.Z. Rollins novels, the E.Z. Rollins novels are very kind of deceptively plot driven because I say deceptively because they lay plot within this whole thing of this guy E.Z. Rollins. I mean, if you saw Devil with the Blue Dress, like this guy, this black man in history, and you get these like moments where you get to see history unfold or like the way that things were in history and in time, but you're getting plot at the same time. You just don't know it. And it's kind of like, well, Ethan Hawke's a white man, of course, but I'm like the way that they dole out the plot is very driven by like, okay, we're going to hang out. We're going to go to this diner and hang out with him because he's trying to hustle something, or he's going to go to his lawyer and he's going to try to, like, he's telling his lawyer to hold these things of stolen goods, but there's a reason all for it. It's a very interesting written show. I'm genuinely surprised that FX actually greenlit this. And the only thing I can think of was that they wanted to keep Sterling Harjo happy and they had Ethan Hawke, and you don't say no to Ethan Hawke. Very, very interesting show. So, yeah.
Did you get around to seeing Chad Powers?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
So,
did we want to talk Marvel Zombies before that, or did we want to talk Chad Powers and then Marvel Zombies?
Let's do Chad Powers first.
Okay.
I'm so interested in what you thought about Chad Powers.
Okay, so I'm... Okay, like, first off, I have to say that there was, like, three moments in this fucking show that made me laugh out loud. Like, and I don't laugh out loud at shit. But there were, like, three moments that literally made me laugh out loud because of something that happened. One of them was the bug. Are you a bug man? That shit fucking made me laugh. But this one is so interesting because, first off, I did not know Michael Waldron was a football fan, like a genuine football fan. Like he's from Rick and Morty and Loki, right? Like in Community. He's the writer of like, you know, Doctor Strange. He's like Fantastic Four. He's also one of the main credited writers on Avengers Doomsday. Like, this is such a football-centric show, like in the way that, like, it's, I don't know, it's kind of weird how to describe it, but I'm intrigued because, like, it makes sense to me that Glenn Powell wrote this because it is very much so, like, taking his image and very much so bending it to the will of a guy who's like a real asshole. And like a guy that's an asshole that you could almost see like this would be like Glenn Powell if you didn't know who he was in real life. Like if you didn't hear from other people like, oh no, Glenn Powell's great. He's a great guy.
Yeah, you would think that this is who he was.
Exactly. It's interesting.
It's arguably applaudable because people are so caught up in like having to look a certain way, it seems like all the time. You get character actors for parts that are going to be like, oh, well, he's a shitty human being. You don't see a ton of, especially young, up and coming, high profile actors willing to take on like starring roles. I'm sure there's a redemption arc for this guy. Like, you can already kind of see it, but almost without fail, every time he does something that you're like, oh, Chad Powers is learning to be a better person. In the next 10 seconds, he is going to do something reprehensible.
Yes.
And it's just kind of fun to watch. The football aspect of it was the thing that really, really blew me away. And that's what I was curious about. And you said it like, who knew that Michael Waldron was a football fan, but anybody like willing to, that there's stuff in this show that doesn't need to be there. That's just about football. Like you could just move around all of that, you know?
No, absolutely. It's interesting because it's like, so like the way that they're like, even the way that they're casting it is interesting. Like, you know, like who they're casting at specific roles. Like I was genuinely shocked that Clayton Crawford actually has gotten a second shot after everything, after the bullshit that he pulled on the Lethal Weapon set, the Lethal Weapon TV show, but also he's playing a character that we expect him to be, like a guy who calls another guy radio. Like there's stuff in this show that I'm genuinely interested in because it's like,
I mean, you have, I don't know how long, I know they filmed this a while ago, but not so long ago that the Hawk Tua thing wasn't on its way out.
Yes.
And that, you know, I was like, okay, I'm surprised that she didn't come to them and was like, you got to cut that. Like, you know, I can't, after all the craziness with her, you know.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And she, I mean, she is poking fun at herself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's very... I don't even know how to describe it to people because it's not a show that you have to know football about, like have to know football to watch, because he makes it so interesting. It is not like it is the best use of, I'll be honest with you, this is the best use of star power I've seen in a long time. Like it makes me go, okay, Glenn Powell, like you're more than a face. Like you find, you got your shot and you chose this. Like this is what you chose of all things. Like
to make, he has a pretty high profile movie coming out in a month.
Yeah. He has Running Man coming out. Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. I think the cast is all spot on. I love Toby Huss. Like he's been showing up in a lot of stuff lately. And I think he's just fantastic. Not so much as the not so much the replacement Dale, although he's doing an admirable job. But you know, it's pretty great. And I mean, anytime we can get Steve Zahn, it's hard to be mad about anything.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a guy who doesn't get enough credit for the just consistently solid work that he's done in anything he's ever been in. He can do in it. He's kind of like Jeff Daniels, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, just like this man can do anything. If you need him to be an absolute grade A moron dipshit, like running into, you know, walls and stuff, he can do it. But you need him to be, you know, this solid, dramatic, like real emotional person. He can do that. It's just, you know, I don't know. Just never enough Steve Zahn and never enough credit for Steve Zahn. I didn't know he was in it until I watched the show. I was like, oh shit, Steve Zahn.
Yeah, it's like he's so good. Like, and they get, like, it's not just that he's good, it's that they've given him a role and he's good. Like, you know, it's one thing to just be good and not have a like a well-written role. It's another thing to have a well-written role. Some people can just not do anything with it, but he does. And you know, it's only been two episodes, but man, like I'm on the hook for this, because it, like within these two episodes, they've really set everything up in a way that, like, for me at least, as a football fan, and also just as a fan of like these kinds of sports movies, I'm very interested in. Because there's the other version of Chad Powers that stars Adam Sandler circa 1998 that I don't fucking like.
Yeah.
That I'm like, oh, this is just a shitty human being doing shitty things. And then there's a speech at the end where he gets to, you know, say, well, I've changed. Da, 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 da. And then everybody goes, okay, good job, Adam Sandler as Chad Powers. And he gets to go to the NFL. Like this is a show that I'm fairly certain. Like the thing that I love about it is that two episodes in, and I'm pretty certain that he's going to get in trouble. Like, this is not a good thing for him.
It might wind up costing a lot of people a lot of things. Their jobs, the whole program, you know, getting investigated for stuff. Like, it's... And he one of the things I do really like is that the show and the character of Chad Powers, everything's very real world. In that, like, he goes to the tryout, right?
Yeah.
And he sees he still has it. But then he walks off the field and he's like, and he tells the mascot, he's like, I can't do this every day. Like, this won't hold up. Like, you know, and he's having to, like, find ways around things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun, because the easy way around that is just like, oh, we won't show the locker room stuff. We won't show that, like, all these dudes kind of just shower together. Like, that's what they do. So, you know.
Yeah, it's I love that, but I also like it's just it's a lot of like it's really I don't even know how to describe it to somebody until they see it, but when you see it there are things that you know as a football fan that you only portray if you're a hard like your writer's room is a hardcore like football fan base, right? Like Michael Waldron, like and like as the head showrunner with Glenn Powell, who created this, like understand. I mean, we knew that Glenn Powell has been on record as being a huge sports fan and specifically football, college football. He's a Texas fan. He's a TU fan, a Longhorn fan, just like Matthew McConaughey. But to know that there's like these little things, like the football, like the OC, like. It's not Zahn's like Jake Hudson that runs the show. It's the OC that runs everything, right? Like the fact that he brought his daughter on as an assistant coach, like that's a fucking like coach fucking bullshit thing that we all know about, and her being like her being upset that and trying to distance herself from being a Nepo baby is like another storyline that's great. Perry Matfield, who I didn't realize, and this is how deep they go into like the weird casting stuff, is that she's Mark Sanchez's wife.
Yeah.
So you know, like, I mean, another college football quarterback, like and now a commentator in college football. It's kind of interesting that there are all of these like nods to football, and like layers that I don't think that if you're not a college football, like if you're not a football fan, you're not going to get them. But if you are, there's a wealth of things here that makes sense that you go, oh shit. I mean, there's even like film stuff that's hilarious. Like Michael Bay's Alamo. Are you fucking kidding me? Like where he gets the idea, he looks at a Mrs. Doubtfire thing at the Fox lot. Like, I know it's because it's 20th Century Fox, but I mean, you can't fucking help but like there's these like weird, like it's Michael Waldron touches because you know the kind of writer he is, but to have it applied into football or a sports show, it's really kind of nice and special. I don't even understand how this, like, this is like definitely like I'm excited as this moves forward because I want to see where it goes. I definitely do. And like, not just because of like Glenn Powell, but the story that they're telling and the fact that I feel like it's a little unpredictable about where it's going to go, especially because he doesn't get the job at the end. Like at the end of the two episodes, he's the backup quarterback. Yeah. Like that's kind of great 70s filmmaking, right? Like where you don't give it to him right off the bat. And I wonder how much I honestly really like, how much do you think Eli and Peyton are involved in this?
There's probably a lot more of them in this than we know.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're also pretty, as grandstanding as they both can be, they are also very gracious guys.
They really are.
And very giving of their time, especially Peyton. There's probably a lot of their stories in this that just come from sitting around like a bullshit session and Glenn Powell just being like, can we record this? Like, so like I can use some it as inspiration, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot more of them than they will ever admit to in this. Just because they're pretty, they both stay fairly humble, in real life. I mean, they can get a little, you know, grandiose, but you know, for two quarterbacks who have multiple Super Bowl wins.
Yeah.
They're pretty nice guys. So yeah, I'm really, really excited to see where the show goes. Just off the first two episodes, I don't think we're going to get, we'll get a redemption arc. I don't think we're going to get the Hollywood ending. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. I like, and that's what genuinely excites me is that it's very rare that you get a show that's going to put you off kilter like this one does, because of just the things that you're seeing, like the bigger picture and the way that it's setting up stuff. It doesn't feel like it's going to be a happy ending, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I'm genuinely excited about this one.
So, Marvel Zombies.
Yeah.
Four episodes was, I think you told me this, it was supposed to be a movie, but they can't use Spider-Man in a movie without, even one directly at, on Disney Plus, without Sony being involved.
Yes.
So we got a four episode miniseries.
Yes, we did. Which, so it's weird because it's like, so I liked it until the end. And I like certain things, but I'm like, why the fuck did you do that? Why did you have Spider-Man talk about, I understand why functionally, because you couldn't have chat. Like you wanted Chadwick Boseman to not speak, not use AI.
They specifically had Black Panther not speak because they couldn't get, obviously he's passed away. Chadwick Boseman wasn't there. So they thought a way to honor him was to not have him speak and Spider-Man tell the story. I don't think that works.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
You don't have to have him say a lot, but you can't pay his family a sum of money and then use Wakanda Forever from some
other,
we've got him saying it over two movies. We've got him saying it
three movies. Because Infinity War, I guess
four.
Four.
We've got him saying it, you know, over a dozen times. So you can't just even that one piece of dialogue. Like it's weird how that one thing rings so false. When he's like, I heard him say Wakanda Forever under his breath. It rings false. That's probably the weakest part of the whole thing. Overall, I think it's pretty good. I think the openings of especially the first two episodes.
Yes.
Are brilliant. Like, the first half of the first episode is really, really good. Like that, just the camaraderie, the friendship, I really love that. And then the second episode, you get kind of the same thing, but with like Jimmy Woo and Shang-Chi and like that whole group doing a kind of Mad Max thing.
Yeah, which to the journey track, that scene. Yeah. Is my favorite thing in the entire series. It's just because it's perfect. Like
I think it's the best piece of animation in all of like the stuff that they've done. Yeah. I'd have to go back and probably rewatch some of Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, but it's certainly better than most of the like action set pieces from What If.
Yeah. I would say that, like, the only exception would be what if T'Challa became part of the Guardians of the Galaxy. But that is something that's truly special. Like, that episode out of everything is like something truly, truly special. But it's also like, even regardless if Chad had not had not passed away, that would still be something truly special because it gets what Marvel What If is. But this, I would say that's some of the best animated stuff that they've done. It's the best like character work in the animation, and it's also just like that track. Like, I don't know what it is, but like everything worked together for that sequence. And you're right, like that first episode, same thing. It's like the camaraderie that you get out of like, it makes me want a Young Avengers so badly before these kids age out.
Yeah, like, I mean, they're already 20. What are we doing, man? Like, you have all of these pieces in place.
Yep.
And you haven't done anything with it because you got scared. Like, it's just chicken shit stuff. It makes me so mad. One of the other things, going back to just Marvel Zombies, mm-hmm. one of the other things that I really think, and I understand, like, it was initially planned out as a movie and you had to cut it up to be a series. Four episodes is not enough. Like, no. For what they were trying to do, the four episodes, you don't get enough time, even with characters that you know. So,
yeah.
But mostly you just get the stuff with Wanda is so underserved and so reliant on you knowing kind of some of the stuff from the What If series.
That, but also some of the stuff from WandaVision.
Yeah.
And also Doctor Strange. Like, yeah. There's so much, like guys like us, we kind of know it. So we've seen everything, right? But like a normie or a passive would be like, what the hell's going on here? Why am I what am I doing here?
Yeah, like, what is why this? Is she doing, like, it's, yeah, her motivations are so underserved. Even two more episodes to give us six to like beef up some of this stuff would have been a massive improvement. Overall, though, I really enjoyed it. They don't pull any punches when it comes to like the level of gore. I mean, it could always be gorier, but it was a lot more gory than I think the original Marvel Zombie stuff was from the What If story.
And yeah, well, because this is TVMA, and that was TV-14, and so I do appreciate the lack of restraint here, because there is a lot of stuff here that I'm like, oh yeah, you don't see this on normal Marvel stuff. Like this was truly it earns its MA rating or its R rating, because it doesn't like, there's enough gross stuff in here that you go, oh yeah. Now, it's not Walking Dead level, but Walking Dead like has earned and leveled up like slowly to that.
I don't know, man. Some of the stuff I know it's animated, so it can be a little more visceral, but
yeah,
like it's a little what's a good word? Gooier. Than a lot of the
wet,
like
wet.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's than the Walking Dead stuff.
Yeah,
which, you know, I know it's like live action blood, animated blood, two different things. The censors get a little upset about the live action blood stuff, but I mean, we've kind of moved so far away from like that level of censorship on TV. Especially cable TV, that, yeah, it feels weird that show, that The Walking Dead still is a little drier.
Yeah, you are, like, but that's how they gotten away with so much of that show, right, is because it's a lot drier than that. Like, it's not as wet, it's not as, like, as slippery. It still has goo, but the goo is, like, jam. It's like condensed motor oil. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's never like, it's always caked on. It's not like this where it's just bleh. Like, it's gloopy. Like, this is gloopy and everything in a way that it's just, you know, it's a lot of fun. Like, it's the way that you can get away with things in animation that you can't get away with in live action. I enjoyed it until the end, and I feel like the end was a cop out because we're not going to get Marvel Zombies 2.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I hope we do, but this one took 5 years. Like, you know that, like, so, like, there was an interview going around with Florence Pugh right now where they talked to her about it, and she kind of goes, oh yeah, I recorded that in 2020. Back with my other stuff from What If.
Yeah, Elizabeth Olsen said the same thing. She was like, oh, I recorded that years ago.
So. Like, it took them 5 years to fucking do this? Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, so here's the thing. Did it take them 5 years? How long has it been sitting on the shelf?
On the shelf.
Because so the first season of What If was in 2020?
Yeah.
Oh, end of 2020, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that means the first Marvel Zombies was in 2020. It was a pretty big hit. And I'm relatively sure we heard then that Marvel Zombies was going to be its own thing. So how long did it, because we know that, like, we just had Ironheart that got burned off. It had been sitting on the shelf for
2 years.
2 years? Yeah.
Yeah, it was 2 years. It was like 2020. It was like 2023 or 2022 when they made it. And also, like, the other thing was, from what we understood, it was a heavily changed show. Like, from what it was originally concepted as, you're right.
I'm not saying it was ready to go in 2020, but I do think it was probably ready to go in 2022, 2023,
mm-hmm.
you know, which seems more likely. Like, yes, you're still asking those actors and they're like, oh, we recorded that stuff 2 or 3 years ago, but that's fairly normal for
an animated project. Yeah.
And, unless you replace the voice cast, they knew who the voice cast was going in. So yeah, as they go in and record season two of What If, yeah, they probably have all those actors recording zombies because they have the script and they're moving forward with it. And so, yeah, it makes sense that it would be, 2023 when it comes out. It's late 2025 and this has become, this is to your point about we probably won't get a second season. This year has kind of become Marvel burning off what they have in the bank.
Yep. So that they didn't have to like do anything new other than the Fantastic Four and Thunderbolts. Like the second half has been definitely burning off shit for them. And
TV wise for sure.
Yeah, TV wise. So, well, just to fill up the void of
yeah. Captain America was kind of a burn off too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, even though they put a lot of money into it to the reshooting, it still ends up being
that's another movie that was supposed to come out 2 years ago.
Yep. And they kept on delaying it and like, you know, that second half is so different than what, that they were trying to do. But back to Marvel Zombies, like, it's like, I really like it. I liked it a lot. I liked what they did with it with regards to, like, the characters that they used and how it came up, like, what they did, which was basically like a horror version of the Avengers, right? This was not Marvel Zombies. This was more like Avengers Zombies or Marvel Zombies Avengers, right? Because a lot of these characters is like, is us being like heavy Marvel fans, like not just from the movies, but comic books as well, know that most of these people are a part of some kind of Avengers crew, right? Either it be New Avengers, West Coast Avengers, or Avengers proper. All of these people are kind of connected by that. But there's also some I love the fact that there's just some great moments in this, like giving Zemo his moment, right? Like, and giving him a moment that's like, you think, like, you know instantly, if you know Zemo, you know instantly, it's not a good thing. Like, whatever he's doing is not good. But, like,
I was with all of that until he lived. Like, and I understand by the end he does die, but, like, there's no way that all of those people die. Zemo lives because he kind of gloms onto the heroes. Like, I don't buy that one of them wasn't like, nah, man, you're staying here. You're going down with the ship, Captain.
Like, yeah.
No freaking way. Especially after Yelena, like, gives herself up. Like, nah, man, I don't buy that narrative, but up until then, like, it was really, it was kind of fun watching all of that. I hope we get more. Like,
I do too. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I really do hope we do, but I don't know if we, like, I have to be honest with myself about these things.
Yeah, you know, like I said, to your point, like, it, this does feel like a lot of burning stuff off for a reset in the next 2 years. So,
which also really sucks, because does that mean that we're losing Kamala Khan? Does that mean that we're losing Riri? Like,
one of the things this show definitely shines a light on, not that we, those of us paying attention didn't already know it.
Yeah.
They have not utilized Amon Vellani to her full potential, because she is fantastic, whether in live action or animation.
Yep.
She makes a character that I don't want to say I don't care about, but she's not from, you know, she came much later in my comics journey.
Yes.
So she's much like Miles. It's like, it's not that I don't care about these characters. It's just that I didn't grow up reading them. So the level of, like, give a shit I have for what happens to them is very small. You know, like, mm-hmm. The death of Superman was a big thing when we were growing up. If it Marvel actually did very recently do the death of Kamala Khan, and it was, I'm sure, like, diehard fans of hers were like, "Oh, this is so emotional." She didn't really die. Don't worry. but it was like a dud for me. Like, just like, I was like, "Oh, okay, well, you know." But part of that is, like, just my, you know, kind of overall reading comics. It's just like, okay, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
But it just didn't hold any, like, real emotional weight. As like, when they did the original Civil War storyline and they shot Captain America, like, that was emotional for me.
That was major. That's a
character that I, even though they brought him back, you know, but all that to say, Amon Vellani makes me really, really fucking care about this character who the comics don't even really make me care about. And you know, not dissing Kamala, like, she's fine. It's just that I don't really care about the character.
But yeah.
I love Amon Vellani. Like, she's fucking phenomenal. And I want to see more Kamala Khan. I want to see more Miss Marvel. It's a fucking shame how they've wasted that. So
it really is. Like, I honestly just, I'm not, like, I'm like, we're not going to get into the whole, like you said, like, there's certain things that I'm not cool and copacetic with, like, and you can very much tell, like, the things that they're doing and the way that they're, like, even as much as, like, we didn't talk about the news, but, and you just kind of mentioned it, like, they've already said that Avengers Infinity War is going to be used as a soft reboot to bring certain characters back, and certain say goodbye to certain characters, which already tells me that, like, some of the characters
mean
Secret Wars, I'm sorry, yes,
yeah.
Infinity War. So that happened a long time ago. But that means that basically these people that they did not use, most of them are going to be gone. Like, I feel like the reason why they gave Dustin Cretton Spider-Man was to so that they could let...
That's another. Like, Shang-Chi. It's just like,
yeah.
He pops up in here and it's just like, yeah, what the fuck, man? Y'all really wasted this opportunity you had with this actor and this character, because they're fucking great. And you've wasted it.
Yeah.
It's very, very frustrating. And I get, like, you spend a lot of money on those movies, but, like, if those actors are willing to do animated stuff, I don't understand why you're not using them for that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, keep the characters alive through the time period. Like, So like he's in the Avengers Doomsday, right? And like I feel like he's gonna be a character because Dustin Cretton is already on to Spider-Man. Like you literally sacrifice Shang-Chi. Like you can tell through the politicking of it, like which characters are not gonna survive. And I don't want to point a finger about like, but when you have got people like Riri, people like Kamala Khan, Shang-Chi, you're starting to get a certain flavor of character that like, and they're going to bring back Cap. They're going to bring back probably Iron Man. They're probably going to bring back
Adam. Are you saying that that they are only interested in the white characters?
No, not at all. Oh my God. No, because they're going to get rid of, they're not going to get rid of Kate Bishop. They're like, you know, she's like, she's arguably one of the hottest stars on the rise right now. But no, I would never say that. I mean, like, you know, they can't even make a fucking Blade movie. Like, and this series shows that it's so easy to do Blade. Even if you give him Moon Knight as a popper, like, how easy is that? Like, how easy is...
I would argue that Warner Brothers released a movie earlier this year that's like, oh, you can literally definitely do a Blade movie.
Yeah! You literally, like... You like there's no reason on this golly green earth that you shouldn't like that. Okay, so like I'm going to pose this question to you.
Fucking which is, Ryan Reynolds proved it last year.
Yes. Okay, so like here's the question I'm going to pose to you. Why is it that in the world of Marvel where you have, like, you know, you arguably have one of the biggest filmmakers in Ryan Coogler. Did he feel the need to go to Warner Brothers to make a movie that was essentially what you guys had planned to make as a Blade film? Like, we all know that it was, like, set during either Depression time or Civil War time that they were trying to make Blade. Like, so much so that they had, costuming that was done for it.
Yeah.
Right?
This is the chicken shit stuff I'm talking about.
Yep. And
I don't fucking understand it. And it's not even a Marvel symptom, it's a Disney symptom.
Yep.
They are a chicken shit company who like will stand there and say we're going to do this and this and this and take on like these heady issues and then let fucking some Karen dipshit get word of it and complain online, and then one of their chief investors sees it, and then there's a board meeting and it's like, oh, we cannot have a non-binary character in this Pixar TV show or whatever it is. And it's just like, oh my God, man, like it's just a chicken shit company. I am honestly shocked that they stood their ground more or less on Jimmy Kimmel and was like, I think part of that is that they have stuff to hold over broadcasters' heads, local yep. broadcasts going like, okay, well you just don't get football then.
Yep.
Like if you're not going to air Jimmy Kimmel, then you just don't get college football. And you know, we can't have that because people in the South will absolutely fucking riot if there's no college football.
Absolutely. And also like, so, you know, and also like, you know, 1.7 million Disney Plus subscribers canceling their subscriptions. Like that yeah. says something too. Like I was doing the math on it, and because Disney Plus is almost $20 now. So like, if yeah. you think about 1.7, that's that monthly income. That is approximately $35 to $40 million of revenue that you're losing. Like not like there is that is
passive instant. Revenue.
Passive like revenue. It's,
like it's you know you want those people to subscribe and forget that they have a subscription and you know
you made them remember.
Yeah. So. Yeah, just a chicken shit company that, like, all that stuff just frustrates me.
Yep.
But all that to say, I still do hope that we get more Marvel Zombies.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the cliffhanger ending, even if that's it. Like, I liked the, like, oh, you thought you were getting a happy ending, and no, world just goes to shit.
Yeah, well, we knew that she was lying. Like, I mean, come on. Like, you know, when has, like, they've set up, they've, like, the one thing that I can say that they've done well over, like, seven different properties is, or seven different films or TV things, is they've set up that Wanda is not to be trusted. That after her brother has died and then her children were taken, or her quote-unquote children were taken away from her, she is out for herself and she does not care about anybody except for herself in creating a reality that is just for her. And I honestly wonder if this is a prequel because of the fact that, like, at the time that this was recorded, I almost wonder if this is, like, the lead-in to, even though it's not, if this is the lead-in to Doctor Strange. Because that would
be kinda cool.
Yeah, but, it, like, because if you think about where she was in Doctor Strange with the creation of the reality and stuff.
Yeah.
It would make sense, right? Like that she, like, and of course we're dealing with multiverses anyways. This is definitely a multiverse, right? Because, like, you know, like, some of these characters are not, they're definitely of a multiverse kind of style. So,
oh yeah, for sure. But, man, Marvel and Disney, they make me so mad sometimes.
Yep. I mean, you know what the funny thing is like, okay, so, like, just as a weird side tangent. So, like, I just watched, I rewatched Spawn because there's a 4K coming out. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it'll be at my house next week.
the great thing is that you get both the theatrical cut, which hasn't been released ever, and the unrated cut. Like, you know, the theatrical has only been in theatrical, but they gave you a 4K of the theatrical and of the director's cut. Wow. Cool. It's been since the theater, and I did not realize how much the unrated cut had stuff and how toothless that theatrical cut was. But I mean, like it really talked to me about like image. And the time it, like, you know, how pissed off everybody was that, like, this is not the first time that, like, we've all collectively just gotten mad at Marvel. Like, the first big, like, for me as a kid, and I think it was probably you at the same time, the first big uprising for all of us was the Image Marvel thing, right? Where all of these artists left, all these creatives left because they were so pissed off at Marvel doing stupid bullshit and not letting them control characters. Like, it really speaks, like, to me, it's kind of funny what's happening right now. It feels like like the lessons that they never learned from Image, because eventually all the guys came back. So, like, this is all like Marvel bullshit again, where it feels like all they are doing is just biding their time and making sure that people forget. And then they're just going to do something that will appease most people in the most bland way possible. Oh, look, we got, like, the biggest kept secret. Why the fuck is Chris Evans in the best shape of his life? We already know why. We all fucking know why. It's the worst kept secret in the fucking world, right? Like, you know, we already know that he's coming back. And the reason why he's coming back is because they need something like that, right? They need the surprise, they need the kick, and eventually they need him to do whatever he's going to do. The whole X-Men thing. We already know X-Men.
Chris Evans kind of needs it too. Much like the Russo brothers. Yeah. It's just like, RDJ tried it. And
he, like, did not. Well, I mean, RDJ got an Oscar, right? And now that he got the Oscar, he's like, give me, what is that stupid, what's the stupid thing, the football, now, give me my money. Like, that's literally what he did. Give me my money. I mean, he's getting paid something like $100 million.
Yeah, it's Logan,
$100 million for fucking Doctor Doom, like a character that we have not seen, like we've seen multiple times in different things, and we're kind of like, okay, I mean, it's that's kind of Doctor Doom, I guess, man, but like it's basically they're making him Iron Man 2.0, like evil Iron Man, right? I don't know, man. Like, it's wild to me to think that we're actually at the, like, it's not really, but we are totally, we're at the cycle point. We're at the, we're literally the way that, like, it's a lot shorter now in comics, but I remember that first wave of, like, I started really getting into comics around 90, right? 89 or 90, and maybe even 88. I think that, like, 88 was my first time. It was whenever McFarlane took over Spider-Man. Spider-Man 500 with the black suit, or the, not the black suit, the red suit. 300, there we go. From that point forward. But, like, things didn't come to a head until, like, what, 90? Like, there was the Image Marvel shakeup that was around 92. And then everything was
93.
Then everything was kind of copacetic until about 98, 99. When shit started to really, like, because fans, we just as collectively as fans, were getting tired of bullshit. And that's when, like, big things started happening, and they tried to like, wow us with Marvel versus DC, Civil War, all this shit. And it feels like the same kind of timeline, except for a little extended, because there were movies, and movies are shiny and new. But I don't know, man, like, it just feels like they're playing the same tricks. Marvel Publishing is, they're not learning anything from Marvel Publishing. And they're essentially doing the same thing that Marvel Publishing did, which, like, and it's funny now that there's the rise in DC, because that's always been the case, right? When Marvel falters, DC rises. And, like, even now, we're like, everybody is losing their shit over DC Publishing with Absolute Batman. Like, literally losing
their shit. I think one of the titles that didn't sell well, and they canceled it, but yeah, everybody's loving that Absolute line. So,
I just got the first 6-issue run of, like, Batman, Absolute Batman. It's wild, dude. Like, I don't even understand. Like, have you read it?
I read the first issue, and
okay,
I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and was right? I don't think this is for me, but I'm glad everybody's enjoying it. I picked up a Batman collection of a miniseries called Batman the Detective from a shop like literally last week. It's fairly recent in the last few years miniseries.
Okay.
That's set in current, like, continuity more or less, and it's about somebody in Europe is going around and killing anyone Batman ever saved. And he has to go to Europe and play detective and figure out what is going on.
Huh.
And it's fucking excellent.
I'll have to pick that one up.
So,
because like you, I read that first issue and I'm like, this feels like Zack Snyder's wet dream.
Yeah.
Like, it literally feels like if he could, like, create, like, or it feels like fan fiction. Like, you know, all of those fan films that they made about Batman and how, like, they have those muscle-bound dudes that look like Alan Ritchson, but even worse. Like, do you know all of those? Like, I can't remember the guy that actually played him, but he's, like, plays Batman in, like, 7 different, like, short films, right? That they actually, they spent a lot of money on. That's what it reminds me of. It, like, this Batman is not, like, this Batman is not, I don't know, like, he's definitely not my Batman. I mean, I guess he's somebody's Batman. Like, and I didn't believe, like, all of the weird social media stuff that I saw about it. I'm like, okay, well, you know what, maybe I'll, like, you know, like, I'll check it out. And, like, the first 6-issue run, it was in a trade paperback that just got released, right? And so, like, I was like, okay, I'll pick it up. Picked it up, read it, Logan. Like, I read the first issue and I couldn't get past it. Like, I couldn't get past, I was just like, what? Who is this Batman? Like, what is this Batman? This Batman looks like fucking Bane. He literally looks like Bane.
It's not for me. So, like, and I know it's like alternate universe stuff, but you know, it is what it is. All right. So let's talk about, more pleasant things before we get into movie stuff very briefly. Anybody listening to this, you included, if you get a chance to see Back to the Future the musical, you absolutely should take that chance. even if tickets are $200. It's so much fun. So much fun. And it also, it's really funny because we're there. There are a lot of people there with their kids. Uh-huh. And that's a real, like, you get reminded real, real quick of how Back to the Future is partly the story of a woman trying to have sex with her son.
Yes.
And
very much so.
I was just like, oh yeah, I always forget about how far they take this whole thing. It's pretty funny. They do such a wonderful job of creating motion with the DeLorean and using sort of special like visual effects to create this look of him traveling back in time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really, really good time. And I think not to its detriment, like to its benefit, you do walk out going like, I just want to go watch Back to the Future now, because holy shit, it's a perfect movie.
Yeah, it is a perfect movie. I used to watch it all the time. I'm very much so like, I even have the 4Ks and I have not opened up the 4Ks because I liked,
I ordered that fucking expensive ass set.
I do. I have the same set. The one that has the hovering hoverboard. Is that yes. The one that you have? Yes. I have that one.
I haven't gotten it yet.
Oh, okay. I've had it for a year now and I've not opened it up because like I've gotten to the point now where, how can I put this? Like, I've seen it so many times that I want to forget about things so that I can rewatch it and have the spark that I used to have. Because, like, I don't think that people like we've lived now 40. Like, so I'm probably going to go see it in IMAX because it's coming out next. I think it's in 2 weeks. They're going to have the Back to the Future IMAX screenings, and I'm going to go because it's been so long since I've sat down and watched them or watched the first one. But I've done that purposely because I want it to remain special. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it is a perfect movie and it's like, I want to remember that again. And so like some of these movies I've put to rest for a while because I want to re-experience it and at least get some kind of the kick that I did back when I used to want, like, I mean, how many times did we watch fucking Back to the Future on HBO? How many times was it on HBO? Like, there was a run where I could probably think that it was probably on at least 4 or 5 times a week for months, right? Because it was fucking Back to the Future.
I couldn't tell you how many times. I mean, I appreciated that, and you would too, the musical doesn't... So the lines that get changed... Like, some are, like, he doesn't say this is heavy that much. He mm-hmm. says it once, and Doc does say the, like, you keep saying that. Is there a problem in the future with the Earth's gravitational pull? Yeah. I don't think he says exactly that. But there are a few, like, very, very small lines in the movie that they don't change for the musical. And, like, that's the thing I really, really appreciated. You know, like, okay. Him seeing Strickland in the past, he's like, Jesus, didn't that guy ever have hair? Yeah. it's stuff like that, that it like makes it like really, really worth it. You know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
The songs are a lot of fun. Even if you don't go see the musical, the whole soundtrack album's on Spotify. You could queue it up and just listen to it. It's pretty great. Doc gets an original song they're all original, but Doc gets like his own song and it's pretty interesting. There's some funny stuff exclusive to the musical. Like the first time Doc starts singing, these girls, like backup dancers, show up and start singing too. And Marty's like, where the hell did these girls come from? And Doc's like, I don't know. Anytime I start singing, they just show up. it's just funny. Weird stuff like that. It's a really, really good time. And I don't know. Part of me is just like, I feel like most of the time I'm not having a good time. So that was just nice, you know? Mm-hmm. I do want to, before we get to the big movie we both did see, you saw it last week. I just saw it last night. Briefly, you watched the new, what's his name?
Shane Black movie. Play Dirty.
I also watched a Shane Black movie last night, but we didn't watch the same movie. Play Dirty, and you were not keen on it.
No. Here's the thing. If it was a regular if it was a regular Prime special, it would be okay. It would be like, oh, okay, that's surprising. But because it's Shane Black, you expect more. And there's just certain things that just didn't work. And I think that the biggest problem for me comes down to, this is originally supposed to be Robert Downey Jr. before things happened, and he just became a producer on it. He felt so bad about backing out that he became a producer to get the money for Shane Black to make this movie. But part of the deal was they had to have a star, and they cast Mark Wahlberg. Say hi to your mother for me, Mark Wahlberg. And I feel like that is the biggest issue, stumbling block in this movie, is that he just doesn't, the thing is that you get Mark Wahlberg to do Mark Wahlberg in a Mark Wahlberg movie. And that's exactly what he's doing. And he's not, like, everybody else, I think I told you, I was like, Lakeith Stanfield, Keegan-Michael Key, Thomas Jane, all these guys are in a Shane Black world. And then there's Mark Wahlberg. And Mark Wahlberg really feels like what he did in The Equalizer, where it's like, you watch The Equalizer and it's like, oh, okay, it's just Mark Wahlberg. Not in The Equalizer. What's the one? Spencer for Hire. Spencer Confidential. You have Winston Duke, who's awesome as Hawk, and then you have Mark Wahlberg. And like, that's literally what it is. It's like, oh, this is a Shane Black movie. Yeah, but it has Mark Wahlberg. Oh, okay. So it's a Mark Wahlberg movie. Not really, but yeah. It is, kind of.
Yeah. I stopped being impressed by Mark Wahlberg quite a while ago. Kind of post-Fighter kind of stuff.
Yeah, maybe post-Fighter. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like he hit his apex with The Departed and his Academy Award with that nomination with that. He was literally playing the most Mark Wahlberg character of Mark Wahlberg characters, like a guy from Boston that ends up shooting Matt Damon. In a tracksuit. I mean, it's disappointing because, it's not entertaining and it's not a lot of fun to watch. But if you're wanting Shane Black movie, this is not it. This is the lowest rung. Like, I know that people give The Predator a lot of shit, and I like The Predator. Like, I like it as a Shane Black movie. I find it hilarious and fun.
The Predator.
Yeah, The Predator.
Yeah. I think that's the one. I think that's the one I haven't seen.
Oh, dude, you got to see it. It's about a bunch of PTSD soldiers that are played by guys like Keegan-Michael Key and Thomas Jane.
On that note. Uh-huh. We decided we're going to do all of October. We're going to watch a whole quote-unquote scary movie franchise, and we picked Predator. So last night, we started with the OG.
Yes.
87 Predator. Let me tell you something, man. I don't know when the last time you saw Predator was, but fuck, that is a good movie.
I watch it yearly, at least, because I love that movie.
I think the last 15, 20 minutes, there's some stuff. If you think about it too much, it's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But, man, the economy of storytelling that goes on in the first hour of that movie, the way they tell you things without telling you things, the way, I mean, there's stretches of that movie that nobody's talking. They're just looking at each other and pointing and doing things. And you know what the hell they're talking about. And I probably haven't seen it in 10 or 15 years. And I was like, damn, I forgot how good this was, man. Like, it's just so freaking good. The cast is just top to bottom. They're all phenomenal, brilliant. And yep. Doing exactly what they should be doing, man.
Absolutely. Oh God. That's like to me, it's one of my, like that movie, because of when I saw it, was my kind of like, it was one of those intro to horrors, because it's so horror adjacent, but it's also like, it leans, like if you really think about it, it leans into the horror, because there's a monster that's also a slasher that's hunting people down, and it's hunting like the most unique people down, which is a special forces group, right? Like the ultimate badasses. Yeah. And then it ends with the final girl, Dutch Schaefer, facing off against the predator fucking serial killer. Like, right? Like it's one of my favorite movies. Like, I love that. Yeah. And like Shane Black as Hawkins is fucking like
it's even, so wild to just yes. be like, that's the guy that becomes like at one point in time the highest paid screenwriter in Hollywood.
Yes, making the most inappropriate jokes. Like, you couldn't make those jokes now. You can't make those jokes.
There's some stuff in this movie that I'm like, oh, somebody would be there like, you got to cut that. Like, yep. You can't say that. So, anybody who hasn't seen Predator in a while, like, yeah, go back and rewatch that, man. So, yeah, we're going to do the whole thing. We're starting at Predator. We're going to do Predator 2. And then we'll do, she says we have to include the Alien Predator movies. So, I guess we're going to include those. Yeah. And then we'll do Predators, The Predator.
Yep.
Prey, and then we'll probably rewatch right before we go see Badlands. We'll probably rewatch
Killer of Killers.
Killer of Killers, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that'll get you through the month, because it'll end, because I know that Badlands comes out November 7th. So that's like literally a week after Halloween. So yeah. No, absolutely. I'm excited to hear your thoughts. Predator 2 is wild. Like, I just recently rewatched that one, and
I rewatched it a couple of years ago because I wrote about it. And so that's the one I've most recently of the ones I'm familiar with. Like, the new stuff is just new stuff, but that's the one I've rewatched most recently is Predator 2. And I love Predator 2. I think it gets a bad rap, much like Alien 3. Like, I think it just gets a bad rap. It's a good fucking movie. It's a lot of fun.
It also, like, if you like, I always take it as headcanon that this is okay. So, like, the real way that Lethal Weapon 2 ends is with Martin Riggs dying.
Yeah.
And then
he just goes to LA or whatever.
Or he changes his name to Mike Harrigan and becomes the Lethal Weapon, and has to deal with the Predator and everything else that's going on here. Like, so much so that, like, at the end of it, he's like, I'm definitely too old for this shit. You know what the funniest thing is that I watched a Lethal Weapon recently. And do you know that motherfucker is my age when in Lethal Weapon 1, saying I'm too old for this shit, saying that he's going to fucking retire? 47. Yeah. I'm like, and he gets to fucking retire? I'm like, no, fuck you. The deuce you say, man. Oh, God. The 80s were a wild time, because like 55-year-olds were fucking retiring. Like, just working class dudes. Can you imagine
just thinking like, hey, I just got to work like 6-7 more years. I can retire. And like, we're going to be 80 before we even get to think about retiring. It's fucking ridiculous.
I, like, you know what?
dude, in 6 or 7 years, the apocalypse is going to happen. I'll retire then. I mean, even then, I'll probably be working till the end. Fuck, are you kidding me? Yeah, I know. It's like, well, I've told my wife, like, I was like, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to retire. I'm like, I just don't know. Like, I think I'm going to be, like, you know, in my 70s working, in my 80s working, because it just, you know, thanks, boomers. Thanks that thanks for like continuing to work. But then also, you know what? Thank you, Gen Z and Gen Y and all of these other little kids who decided that they didn't want to work and they wanted to live off of mama and dada and had their parents continue to work, because like, Jesus Christ, like we're all in a cycle. It all goes back. But anyways, yeah, I always find it wild. Like, he was retiring at 47. Like, I could be retiring this year if I was in 1988 and a cop. Like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, bro, like, I would have gladly been a cop in the, like, in the 70s and 80s if it meant that in fucking 87 at 47 years old, I'd be able to retire. Are you fucking kidding me? Jesus, man. But yeah, I'm excited for this, dude. I really am. Are there other series that you're going to be watching?
No, we're just going to try to stick to one because there's so much other stuff coming out.
Yeah.
And so much TV that we watch already. I was like, let's just pick a series. And she was like, what about Predator? Because that new Predator movie is coming out. I was like, okay, that works for me. So,
okay.
You know, I tried to steer her towards like slasher stuff, but she picked Predator. So we're doing Predator. So, all right, so one battle after another.
Yes.
What did you think about one battle after another?
Well, I'm in the hive mind and thinking that it was one of the best films of the year. Was it anxiety inducing? Abso-fucking-lutely. Like, this movie was like, by the time that Lockjaw invades the Bataan or whatever the town is that Bob and his wife are in, I literally had a panic attack. Like, I literally was like panicking because they're the imagery. Like, I watched it in 70 IMAX, so it's like super big, but also to see the kind of imagery that Anderson was using. And it was very much like, that was what was happening in LA, like not even like 4 months ago. It's a fucking wild ride because he somehow manages to induce panic, but at the same time, there are genuine laugh out loud moments. Like this is the most unserious Leo DiCaprio has been ever. This is his dude performance, but at the same time, it absolutely feels entirely serious. Like, he's been working towards something like this, right? For a while. Like, this combination of pathos and humor. Like, this weird kind of, like, he... Like, I call it the... Like, you know, we were just talking about Aliens vs. Predator, but it's like the Hudson thing, right? Like, Bill Paxton, like, perfected the funny panic attack as Hudson. But I don't know if Bob or Ghetto Pat, whatever you want to call him, from one battle after another, doesn't take the prize away from him after a couple of years and a couple of rewatches of this movie, because goddamn, Leo is like on fire in this movie. Like, literally, like, watching him, I was like, I couldn't help but think of Bill Paxton's Hudson and the weird kind of, it's funny, but it's not. Like, I had to go back and recall, like, the first time I watched Alien, or the first couple of times I watched Alien, it didn't think that Hudson was the funniest character. And if you think about it, he's genuinely terrified. But he's, like, he's using humor in the most crassest of ways, right? Yeah. To deflect off of everything. And Bob is kind of the same way, except for he's not funny, but he is, like, he's funny to us. But this is the same kind of reaction. Anybody who, like, was fed up with shit and having, like, what time of day it is. Don't you understand? I just need to find my fucking daughter. Like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of a brilliant performance. And it's like, there's a lot of brilliance going on in this movie. But it's brilliance for very, like, it's weird because I'm still wilding out that this movie, like, it feels like a $150 million movie, but it was made, like, this is such a unique voice and such a unique, like, point of view, and to have this movie exist is very wild to me, because it's like, how did he get away with making, like, how did they all get away with making this movie with this political point of view and this, like, this budget? I honestly don't know. Like, how did he, like, it's going to be one of those things. Like, I want to, like, in 10 years, I want that book that talks about how he got away with it, like, truly got away with it. But that's like my big level thoughts is that DiCaprio is on fire in this movie. It's not for everybody, but also, like, I feel like everybody should see it, at least to see if it's something that they jive with, because, man, is it muscular filmmaking, because it's, like, doing, like, seven things all at once.
Yeah. I agree with some of that.
Okay.
I'm an outlier, apparently. I get why everybody is so high on this movie. Mm-hmm. It is extremely well made. Very, very well acted. It looks gorgeous. Almost none of it landed with me. Okay. The things that I wanted the movie to focus on were never what it was focused on. I thought it was going to be about, you know, reconciling, like, the revolution or your revolutionary, like, thoughts versus, like, raising a family. And it kind of tiptoes into that, but then it just becomes, I got to get my daughter back. Okay. The Sean Penn is excellent in the movie. Mm-hmm. He does everything that's asked of him and more. The mannerisms he creates for his character, like, that's, I gotta believe that's all him, because that's just the kind of actor he is.
Absolutely.
I don't understand why you create, unless I just, there's something I don't know, why you create a fictional white nationalist society. That feels like almost cowardly to me. I think his point was to poke fun at how stupid it all sounds by calling them the Christmas Adventurers Club or whatever. I think that's what he was getting at, but to me, that makes it too much of a joke when it's a real organization that does real, lasting, harmful things to people and to our society in general. And so I get why you want to play it as a joke, but giving them a stupid name that every time they say it and say Hail Saint Nick, it's just funny. And it is funny, but I don't understand why you do that. I would love to hear his reasoning, if it's something beyond, like, I wanted to portray them as sounding as stupid as I think white nationalists sound. We don't spend any time with the mother past her, like, you know, going rat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a shame. We get that letter at the end. That's fine, but it doesn't really reconcile anything. The reveal that she's really Sean Penn's daughter, not really a reveal for me. Like, the minute you introduce the possibility when she meets Sean Penn at the hotel, I was like, oh, this is not DiCaprio's daughter. Like, I knew it.
I don't think that he's hiding that. Like, that's the other thing. I think that that's, like, those things, like, he's never, like, he never, like, I think that the whole thing of them having sex and then the jump cut to her pregnant is, like, the visual language of, oh, no, no, no. this dude is definitely not his daughter. So it's not a surprise. Yeah. I think the only person it's a surprise to is Sean Penn. Like, I think that the moment that his daughter meets Lockjaw and knows the situation, she absolutely knows that he is her father because of just certain things about her and Bob don't jive. Like, Bob buries himself in drug and alcohol after the revolution. And she does not, it's like, she's like, you could just tell his daughter would, like, you know, she never would do that. Right. Like, she's not the, she's not that type. She is driven, focused. She's like her mother, but also if you think of Lockjaw as that kind of same driven person, but just a different political ethos, it makes complete sense that she would be eventually their kind of, like, their progeny. I can see, like, here's the thing, is that everything that you just said makes complete sense to me, because this is not a movie that is made for everybody. So, like, I'm not recommending it to anybody, because, and I know this sounds like a dig, but it's not, because it's such a unique, like, it's such a narrow gaze at a certain specific, like, it has a voice. And the thing that I appreciate and I respect more than anything is that it has a voice and it does things and it says things that it alone wants to say. It doesn't have any kind of, like, oh, I'm gonna have universal appeal. No, it's made for a certain specific audience, right? But within
I wish it was harsher, though. That's the thing. Maybe harsher is maybe the wrong word. I wish it was.
You wish it was more, it was more, like, instead of using, like, the French 77 and the Christmas time adventures, using real world, like, making this more about, like, instead of having a layer.
Because it is about what's currently happening.
Yes.
Like, what was happening, what's still happening. Like, it's about those things, but then doesn't seem to have the courage to say specifically it's about those things, because ultimately what the story is it's about him and his daughter and, like, sins of the father. It's just all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that is a nice movie, except, like, you do all this other stuff and make me want to know and care about all the other things that are going on in this movie. Benicio del Toro, that whole thing is fucking fascinating. And we barely scratched the surface of it. Like, just barely. And that's way more fascinating to me than what is going on in Bob's life, you know, and what he's having to deal with and the past that he's having to confront. And I do think that there's something there, and I don't think he's hiding it, of, like, these people start a revolution or want to start a revolution, and then something happens and they check out. Like, Bob's like, well, we can't do this anymore because we have a family. And so we have to, and then you have people that join a revolution, but really they're just there because they're chaos. That's what they thrive on.
Yeah.
Like, her mother, she was, not that she didn't believe in what they were doing, but for her, it was about the chaos. That's what she needed in her life. And the minute it was like, no, we have to quell the chaos because we have this kid now, she had to get out. Like, she just had to get out. And
I mean, so much so that she sells out all of her, she sells out her entire organization just so that she could find a way out of not just of her organization, but her responsibilities as a mother. And it's an interesting, for me, it's a very interesting portrait of a woman and an uncompromised woman Like yeah. a woman who just takes what she wants and has no problems with it. Like, yeah. Like I find it very, like that first opening moment is very interesting in regards to that.
Well, one of the things that it brings up that it never resolves or truly confronts, I think, is that the idea of like, and neither one of us, or at least that I know of, you don't have a child. I don't have a child. Neither one of us really understands the idea, but I've heard it talked about that, like, when you have a kid, there is this very real, like, almost jealousy of, like, you feeling replaced
yes.
in someone else's life by that child. And it happens on both sides of the sexes. And, like, it does bring that up, but it never truly confronts it. And what that means, like, and that's part of my problem with the movie is that I feel like it brings up a lot of ideas that it never truly confronts. And if that's his intent, okay, fine. Like, you made me think about a lot of things. That's great. But I wanted it to also confront the, not necessarily resolve them, but truly confront them and just be like, yeah, like, isn't this fucked up? One of the other things I really liked is that the idea that, okay, you have this extreme left-leaning or left-leaning extreme organization
mm-hmm.
and how they're trying to be organized and how chaotic that organization is and how they can't truly function like on a complete level because of like somebody got their feelings hurt on the phone. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
No, absolutely.
Like it's interesting. And then you have this extreme right organization who absolutely functions almost without failure because of like it's two extremes, but like why can these assholes function as an organization, but we can't?
Yeah. Well, like, but also like the other thing that it brings up is it shows the three spectrums. It shows the far right, the far left, and then the people in the middle that are Sergio, aka Benicio del Toro's character, because they are organized. Think about that. Like, it's so interesting how
How he moves everybody through. Like, some people do get left behind. Like, it doesn't all completely work out, but he is able to like all of that's able to function way more smoothly than the anarchists or whatever you want to call them. Like. Yeah. He can't find out the place they're taking his daughter because he forgot a code word. But at the same time, he's like, it's also what, again, something else I appreciate it bringing up, like Leo's character, Bob is, he is a left leaning. He is like, but when he's pushed, like how quickly almost all of that shit goes out the window.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm going to find you. I'm going to fuck you up. like, and this is somebody that's on his side, you know?
Absolutely. And the safeguards are in place to help him. But I also think, okay, so I feel like it's there. It's just very subtle of the critiques it's making, because I think that it's very weird, because I think that what he's like, Anderson is trying to say is that like Benicio says something, like Sergio says something that's very telling, where like Ghetto Pat says, or Bob says, I'm so sorry for making this happen. I'm so sorry. And Sergio says, looks at him, Sensei says, and looks at him and goes, it's not your fault. This has been happening to my people for hundreds of years. You were not the cause of this. And I think that that's the key entry point into everything that's happening, which is that DiCaprio's ghetto Pat is a, like, and most of the French 75 are tourists in this. They don't have any skin in the game. The reason why the Christmas Adventurers and Sergio's people are so committed is because Sergio's, it's his people. It's the immigrants. It's all of these people that have been oppressed for hundreds of years. The thumb have been pressed down on them, right? So they have nothing to lose, or they have everything to lose. The same way that the Christmas Adventurers are set up, because they also feel that they have everything to lose. And when you have everything to lose and nothing, like, you have everything to lose, you quickly find out, like, what the fuck you're made of and how you would push into things. Like, the French 75, like, it feels like it's a conglomerate of a bunch of people that are privileged, that don't give a fuck about anything other than thrills, or, like, this is a college thing, this is a phase. And for, at least for me, this is what I've seen watching this movie two times.
I agree, I do think it does, like, kind of put a bullseye on that revolutionary way of, like, there is a time in your life where you feel this way, and that's gonna go away. Like, you might still want to hold on to those ideals, but, like, you're gonna get old and you're gonna just be like, I don't have this in me anymore.
Yeah.
Like, revolutionaries are a young person. Like, a revolution is a young person's game. Like, it is kind of like saying that, but to what you're saying about Benicio's character, like, to your point about that, like, but it doesn't have to be, because
yes,
this is the way you do that long term, like, by not inciting violence, by not blowing shit up, by
exactly,
by being a present, steady, like, focused person who is positive and creates positivity in others and helps where he can, and, like, but it doesn't spend enough time in that, I don't think. And that's what I don't love about it. Like, I understand why the movie takes the focus that it takes. It is Leo's story. It is about him and his daughter. It, like, I get all of that, but I don't know. I wound up being way more fascinated by the outlying things and wishing there were more focus on that and less of the, I have to get my daughter. I mean, it becomes a Taken story almost, yeah, you know,
a unique Taken story, but a Taken story nonetheless. Yeah. Where Bob doesn't really do anything and his daughter ends up having to save himself or herself.
Yeah.
Which I like, it worked for me because
or brush away all that other stuff and more focus on all of that.
Okay.
Like, it feels too spread thin. Like, everything does. Like, they get the bulk of the story, but it's not focused enough on that for me to really be invested in what's going to happen there.
Okay.
And I become more interested in the outlying stuff. Whereas, if you just did away with all that other stuff and just focused on that, maybe I'd be more invested. But instead, you just have bits and pieces of things that I'm like, I like a lot of these bits and pieces, man, but, like, this whole salad ain't doing it for me. Like, I like the parts, just all together, it's not doing it for me. I do one other positive thing. It's weird. I'm pretty positive on a movie I'm saying I didn't really like. But I think the score is brilliant. Somebody on another podcast, Star Wars podcast, I can't remember who it was, once called John Williams' score the oxygen of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, the opposite of that, because, like, you can't fucking breathe because of like the way the methodical nature of it. It's very, very well done. Maybe the best part of the whole movie is when Lockjaw gives her over to the bounty hunter. The bounty hunter drops her off with the redneck pieces of shit. That whole sequence is so fucking good.
It like, really is.
From from like him dropping her off to, I guess, the end of the movie, more or less, is really just like, shit, what's gonna happen? Because, I mean, you kind of are like, I assume they're both gonna make it out, but, and then old buddy in the fucking souped up car comes out of nowhere and just shotguns Sean Penn in the head. Like, did not see that coming.
Yeah,
and still didn't fucking kill him.
Kill him. Like, he's like this weird, like, he's like, Lockjaw is kind of like the Terminator, the unstoppable force. Like, yeah. He's, like, I mean, he really represents a certain kind of nightmare person for people. Like, very much so. Like, he is like the worst kind of nightmare of a person that you could ever imagine. Like, even if you shotgun him, he's still alive. And but also like the most hilarious, stupid, and inept person in the world. Like you watch him and you look at him and you go, this guy's a fucking moron. Like, he doesn't real like we all know what's like the weirdest part about like him is like the biggest joke is that at the end we all know what's going to happen. Like, when he goes to the Christmas Adventures West Coast, like,
they're gonna kill
you. Yeah, they're gonna kill you, stupid shit. As soon as you see the office and it's empty, you're like, yeah. Oh yeah, he's fucking dead. Like, why did you come back? They tried to murder you, you fucking idiot. And then the reverse rape talk, I'm like, oh, you're a fucking idiot. You could have survived, you could have just like went on your merry way, but you had to fucking continue on.
The flip side of that, like, the smartest of all the group that group that you see is the guy that's always interrogating.
Oh God, people. he was fucking terrifying.
Yes.
Fucking terrifying. Like, because so clinical. That's
exactly how it is. It's like, I'm sitting here, I'm your friend, and then all of a sudden it's just turn on a dime. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Do you want to go to prison? Like, and it's just like, it's so effective. There's so many great performances in the movie. Like, I it's going to wind up being, you know, like Leo and Sean Penn getting so much love, and as it should be. But down to the small. I mean, fucking Tony Goldwyn's in it for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, and it's great. He's great. Like, he's a horrible person, but he's great playing it. So I wish it landed more for me. I have not, I think this is the first PTA movie I've watched since There Will Be Blood. I saw The Master. I saw The Master once, and that Master also really didn't work for me. It's another one where like I watched and I was like, these performances are all excellent. And this movie looks gorgeous. None of it is landing for me. Like, it just didn't work. So, okay. So I didn't see Inherent Vice. I didn't see Licorice Pizza. I think there was one in between there somewhere. Maybe I'm wrong.
Let's see. There Will Be Blood, The Master, Inherent Vice, Phantom Thread.
Phantom Thread, yeah. I didn't see Phantom Thread either. So.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I wish it landed more for me. I'm glad everybody thinks it's going to be the movie this year. I'm happy for everybody involved. It's not for me.
Like, the weirdest part is the funniest part about this all is that this is the second movie. Like, so like my top two movies, we don't agree on. Like, and they're like, and it had the same, you had the same reaction to Sinners that you did to this, which is that the focus is not like the focus on it isn't focus for you. Like, it, yeah. And I find it very interesting that that's the way that it had worked for you in both instances. And both movies are critically lauded. Like, the best movie, like, people are considering them the best movie of the year, best movies of the year. And, like, the way that you're, you have absolute valid points. And I'm not saying that you don't. What I am saying is that it's very interesting to me that what people have considered the top two movies of the year are movies that essentially were like things that you could respect, but ultimately didn't work for you.
Yeah. I mean, gorgeous, well-acted films that just didn't really land for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I will say this, like, another movie on that spectrum is Weapons. And
yeah,
when we first talked about Weapons, I was like, yeah, I don't know. I just didn't really love it. But Weapons is a movie that I've thought about. Like, other than like the kind of after effects of Sinners and like the conversation around it, I've not thought about much in that movie.
Okay.
At all. And that, you know, that's fine, because like a lot of the movie is an experience that my family's not ever had. Like, that's not where my family came from. So like, well, I mean, we were poor, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know, like, what you mean.
So the movie's not for me. Totally great. It's still, you know, a well-made movie. This, you know, kind of is more in my lane and not for me, but like Weapons, I continue to think about. I probably won't think about anything in this movie other than listening to everybody talk about how much they like this movie and me just going like, yeah, I didn't really like it. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. There's a lot of stuff I liked about it, but it just didn't land for me. I don't know. It wouldn't be in my top five. Weirdly enough, my top five movies of the year might wind up all being Stephen King adaptations, or at least four of the five.
Yeah.
Because, like, The Monkey, Life of Chuck, and Long Walk are pretty high on the list for me this year.
Which, that is, like, the best part about this year is that it's been a year where nobody can agree on anything. So, like, top 10 lists for certain people are going to be very wild and very different, but absolutely valid. Like, absolutely, like The Monkey is still like one of my favorite movies of the year. Like, it's still like a brilliant stroke of brilliance. Like Theo James is amazing.
Toxic Avenger is probably right up there
too. That's great. That's great. I still need to see that movie.
I can't wait till you watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. That will be a movie that I watch this month as soon as it comes on to, as soon as it comes on to like home video, or not home video. Home video. Yeah. As soon as it gets released in home video.
Yeah. I think the Blu-ray's out in a few weeks. So.
Yes. The 4K. Yeah. The 4K is too. Yeah. Right? I
pre-ordered the Steelbook.
Nice. Very well. It was cheaper than the regular 4K. Yeah. Because it was like $39.99 and the other one was $50. I was like, no way. Like, if anything, like, I appreciate when we don't agree on things, because it makes for an interesting conversation, and this one definitely did. Absolutely. Next week, we'll have to talk offline, but I don't know if I'm going to be available next week. I think we talked about, but next week is going to be, we'll figure something out, because we've got Roofman, and then this weekend, I don't know if you're seeing it, but I'm very interested in Smashing Machine.
We might go see it. I don't know. Like,
I'll report back once I see it, and I'll let you know.
Everybody's saying how great his performances are. Mm-hmm. I know it's Safdie, and like, that's great. I don't know. I watched the trailer and I was like, yeah, I don't know. I kind of just see what you're doing, and I can't muster up the care. So
okay.
All right. Go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, and go read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com. We've got a ton of content right now. Like, By the time this posts, you'll have a couple of new 4Ks spawn. I just reviewed, like I said, great picture and sound and like really a lot of like special features. I was genuinely surprised. And then also in the mountain, In the Mouth of Madness, John Carpenter's, like Sam Neill joint, like one of his Apocalypse trilogy gets a 4K release from Arrow Video. And I just reviewed that and I'll have some more stuff. I'll have a bunch of more stuff. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes, the prequel and the sequel both got 4Ks and I've reviewed those. So, those will be out. So there's a bunch of stuff, like there's a bunch of like horror 4Ks that I'm going to be reviewing this month. About because I've already viewed some of them and they're freaking amazing. So yeah, no, absolutely.
We'll be back maybe not next week, but soon, and we'll have a shit ton of stuff to talk about. So we'll see you guys soon.
Talk to you guys soon. Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.